My name is Anne Ogden Gaffney, and my book is Cook for Your Life. My website is cookforyourlife.org. And if you don't want to write the whole thing out, you can just key in cfyl.org too.
Talking today to Anne Ogden Gaffney. All the photos of you show you almost maniacally grinning. I love that. So you must be having a good time.
Well, I am, yeah.
Well, you are a two-time cancer survivor, and that, I guess, is how you got involved in the project Cook for Your Life?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, I didn't start off my life being involved in food except in an entirely kind of hedonistic way. Mm-hmm. I was in the fashion industry, and I got sick twice, and the second time when I was going through treatment, I realized that my love of cooking was really actually a huge help in getting through the treatment because of things like taste changes and feeling queasy, these kinds of things. So, yeah, I was able to adapt what I was eating and realize that a lot of people didn't have that ease of action, you know, so I decided to do something about it.
Well, I am a cancer survivor as well. And you know how your whole world seems to get consumed by hospitals and doctors
and your
treatments and your tests. It's so all-encompassing that it's really great to be able, I think, to focus on something else that's soothing and comforting and is going to help you get better.
I was in support groups, particularly at Gilda's Club. I had to give them a shout out. I realized that, you know, I come from a real foodie family. I'm half Italian. My dad is English and he was a master baker. So I've been around food my entire life, really. And also living abroad, I lived in Paris for 12 years. You just can't avoid getting involved in food, I don't think, in those circumstances. And so what I realized was that, you know, just talking to people, you know, support group, you'll talk about what's going on with you. And as you, having been through it yourself, you'll know that, you know, you're not told about things like taste changes and how things that you normally like to eat or make you feel good can taste weird because of the chemo and all of that. So I don't know. I started to sort of, as we were talking about these issues, I started to share tips, you know, and then share recipes. Then I had a posse of people I used to go out and eat with, you know.
Yeah.
We were actually looking for spicy food because we used to like that to blast our chemo palate. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and I started talking to a patient navigator at what now is Mount Sinai West. And then we organized a cooking class, and the rest, as they say, is history. Once I saw how much it helped people, I was hooked. And I decided I didn't really want to go back into the fashion industry, which is where I'd been for, you know, the past 30 years to that. And started Cook for Your Life.
And a new chapter is born in your life, Anne.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you'd have told me 10 years ago that, you know, what was going to happen, I would have said, no way.
So how would you get started on the road to healthy eating? I would think that planning is important.
It is. And the thing is that, you know, honestly, one of the reasons that, you know, we call it Cook for Your Life is that cooking is the first step towards healthy eating. You know, you can't rely on the food industry to keep you healthy, really. Especially when you're starting to cook, planning is really key. It's also key to helping you stay on a budget, too, by the way. For myself, when I was going through treatment, I got into a rhythm. On my up days, I would cook food for the freezer for my down days so that I would, you know, I would be keep myself fed without having to actually hit the stove. And I think that's a great way for living it afterwards. As you said earlier on, you know, I mean, it's cooking can be a soothing, relaxing thing. Once you stop seeing it as a chore, it's a fantastically kind of zen task that you can give yourself to and have a great result at the end, something you can eat, which is something good to eat. But that's what I wish for people, really, not to sort of see passing an afternoon cooking as drudgery, but actually something that's relaxing and rewarding.
What I liked about your book and also about your website, you can get the whole family involved because these recipes are not just something that the person who is sick or recovering can eat, but the whole family can eat.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I wanted to make delicious food that was kind of universal because a lot of, you know, special diets can make cancer patients feel pretty isolated. And cancer patients can feel pretty isolated anyway, just because of the treatment. Mm-hmm. But I felt it was important for, you know, to be able to, everyone to be able to eat together. And one of the things that, you know, kind of warmed my heart is when I get sort of comments that say exactly that, you know, that, oh, yes, this was great. It allowed me to eat with my family and we could all enjoy the food together. And it's, for me, cancer patients, they need to be eat a special meal aside from everybody else. Everyone can eat together. I think it's important. It's so important too for your well-being, you know.
You mentioned constipation, and this is a problem not only for cancer survivors, but because of all the meds that are out there now for so many of us, what would you say helps the most that you've found with constipation?
Well, actually, I think it's, if your diet allows it, is to, first of all, I think most people don't drink enough liquid, so I think that's part of it. But also, it's eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and whole grains, because most of us don't get enough fiber, and it's not enough to have some, you know, soluble fiber in a yogurt or a drink to really make that work for you. Actually, it's best to get it through real food.
Yeah,
so that's the only thing I could say. Eat your veggies and eat your fresh fruits.
Okay, Mom. What about fatigue? One of the recipes on your website, as a matter of fact, I think it's this morning, is for spicy shrimp and white bean soup. Yum.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the reasons that, well, it's delicious and easy, that, by the way. But the thing is that when you're tired, you need protein. You know, it's very easy to sort of head for the cookies and sort of have a quick sugar rush. But actually, the best thing you can do from yourself when you're tired is to eat something that's got high in protein. That particular meal is. It's great because it helps. It's high in calories. So if you need to keep your weight up, it's good too, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you need protein. And you also need to keep moving. I mean, this is something that a lot of research is showing, that if you can kind of prize yourself up off the couch, and I know how difficult that can be.
Yeah.
And, you know, just walk around a bit. You know, I'm not talking about a route march, just walk, stroll a little. You're going to feel a whole lot better. You're going to get more energy.
But, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but as far as the food concerns, it's protein.
Another thing, I've seen this term before, but you mentioned it, neutropenia. It's
a type
of white blood cell, which is decreased in the body, and it affects the body's ability to fight infections. And you have a series of foods that can help with that as well.
Yes. One of the things that happened to me in my treatment, I was actually put on a neutropenic diet because of the chemo I was on.
Mm.
And that literally, you know, you look at the diet list, the food list that they give you, and, you know, honestly, especially if you live in New York City, all of a sudden all your go-tos, you know, you can't eat, you know, salad bars, you know, deli food, sushi, none of that you can go near. And you have to cook everything. And, you know, a lot of the patients and caregivers I work with, they get very sort of nervous about getting bugs because your immune system is low. So you have to be very careful about cooking things.
Mm-hmm.
But you can cook things like 2 or 3 minutes. You don't have to, like, for example, cook spinach for half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, which turns it into mush. You can
mm-hmm.
you can stir fry at a high heat for like 3 minutes, and it's going to be perfectly fine. And I think it's just giving people permission to really use those guidelines well, and, you know, so that they can still enjoy the food, you know, and cooking and poaching fruit, for example, instead of eating it raw, especially this time of year when you've got juicy peaches and things like that. It's a shame not to be able to eat them, but you can. You just have to cook them. And we've got a great recipe online, and also another one in the book for microwaving fruit to make compote, which is really, you know, takes seconds.
Yeah,
and does the job.
You collaborate with Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health.
Yes.
That certainly gives you cred.
Yeah, it sure does, yeah. You probably noticed that the website is translated into Spanish. We've always worked in the Hispanic community here in the city, because I realized early on that, you know, they were really particularly underserved when it came to food. And I started working with a researcher up at Columbia Mailman who was interested in that community. And I, you know, and so we got together, and I'd already designed like a course, if you like, to ease mm-hmm. people into healthier cooking, you know, using traditional foods and traditional flavors, working with Spanish chefs, so nice. That, you know, we could sort of help people eat well on a budget and eat food that they wouldn't, you know, that their families would eat with them too. Back to that again, because, you know, a lot of the women in our focus group were saying that they had to cook separate meals, which when you're on the low end of the income scale is not really an option. So we ended up getting funding from the National Institutes of Health for this study, and we're just winding up a second one right now. What was great about it was that we showed that the way we taught things, we were able to actually get people to make lasting changes in what they ate to increase their fruit and vegetable intake. So it's very exciting, all of that. I mean, I was thrilled when that happened.
That's fabulous.
It works.
Fabulous. Cook for Your Life is such a marvelous book. And as I mentioned at the top of the interview, it's so beautifully done as well. Anything you would like to mention as we begin to wrap things up?
I just want to talk about the book just quickly.
Sure.
It's not a traditional setup for a book. I've done it my way, how people feel when they're going through treatment. So if you're looking for a soothing recipe, like a chicken soup recipe or something that's just easy to digest, you can find that there under soothing. If you don't have a lot of time or your caregiver doesn't have a lot of time, there are simple recipes. There's about 5 ingredients. And everything is done by, is blocked out that way rather than by meal, because I think it's important, you know, to get what you feel like, not have to search for it. And that was my intention with the book, to make it really user-friendly for people going through treatment.
Well, I think you succeeded beautifully, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Pat. Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking with Anne Ogden Gaffney about her book, Cook for Your Life. Thank you.